small conversation about mental health can have a big difference. That's what Time to Talk Day, February the 4th, is all about. It's the day the nation gets talking about mental health, and considering everything that has happened in the past year, you could argue that it is more important now than it ever has been. So that's the reason behind this special episode of the podcast, brought to you along with our partners at the Mintridge Foundation and also the Royal Agricultural University at Cirencester. Joining myself and Will to talk, as the title suggests, we have some lovely guests. First up, it's Georgina Roberts, British Olympic trap shooter. Hello, Georgie.
Hi.
Next up, we have Northampton Saints fullback George Furbank. Hello, George.
Hello.
We also have the RAU Student Union President, Lewis Bebb, with us today. Hello, Lewis.
Hello.
And lastly, we've got Charlie McMenemy, the RAU Student Union Welfare and Campaigns Officer. Hello, Charlie.
Hello, hello.
Lovely. Lots that we'll talk about as the episode goes on, but before we dive into our discussion, I think I'd better start by asking George, how is everything after what happened on Saturday? Because it looked like it hurt a lot.
Yeah, I mean, at the time it did hurt. I'm all right, to be honest. It's just, I've just got like a minor concussion and a broken nose, so I'm doing all right. Just struggling to breathe a little bit, but I'll be fine.
Yeah, definitely. I think when we all saw what happened, I think we all felt quite a lot. But good to see that it's not as bad as what it could have been. And everything's going all right. So to start off with, and I like to start these discussions with a tough, thoughtful question to really get everyone's brains booted into gear, really. And it's one I'm going to be aiming at all of you individually. Partly so that those listening to the audio can also get used to all your voices, because there's a lot of people on this particular episode. But my first question is, can you think back to a time for yourself or for someone you know or for someone you've interacted with when talking really helped? Georgina.
I talk a lot. I'm a very, very open and honest person. And I've kind of recently moved back to North Wales after being out for the majority of lockdown due to various different conflicting restrictions between England and Wales. So it's the first time I've ever lived by myself. And so I've really relied on family and friends kind of throughout the past 6 months, especially because my dad has got terminal cancer. And so being away from him for such a long period of time has been difficult when you're not really sure what's going to happen. So yeah, definitely relied on support network, especially teammates being on so many different training camps. Yeah, they've been a fantastic support for me recently.
Mm-hmm. And we'll pick up on like those individual points later on. But next we'll go to George.
I guess I've been a lot luckier than Georgie in some ways, in the fact that recently over lockdown and stuff we've been able to train and we've been out and about and interacting with people quite a lot. So yeah, in that way it's been positive. I can't think of a specific time where talking has helped. I think it always helps, like in the background regardless. Again, I'm lucky that I've got a really good support network, in friends from the club, friends from school, and then family back home as well, who were all reasonably close. So I mean, as much as our friends, as friends, we like to laugh and joke around, take the piss out of each other. I feel confident that I have a close bond with enough of them that I could easily just go and have a chat if I was struggling with something.
Mm-hmm. I think support networks is going to be a key theme that we touch on throughout this particular episode. Lewis.
Yeah, again, sort of echo what George has said. For me, really, there hasn't been any sort of particular moment which sort of stands out as such. You know, it's all, especially now more than ever, especially these last couple of months, you know, all be aware that universities have been online. For goodness knows how long, that's me now. I'm back up in the sunny side, which is, again, like Georgina, North Wales. So when you're working, you'll be aware, sort of when you are working via Zoom and Teams or whatever, it is a very difficult life, and it is, you know, you don't get that quick chat with your peers or your colleagues, which you would normally would be the lifeline. So if, you know, for me to easily catch up every now and again with one of my colleagues, which I really get on with, it's great just for that chat. And it is, you know, you really do realize why you do it, especially talking to students as well. I know when speaking to Charlie and the rest of the officers, you realize, you know, this is why you do it. But sort of going back to sort of the support network, which has been mentioned, agriculture is one of the most dangerous industries in the UK by a long way, for suicide as well, because it's very easy for farmers and labourers to have the means to do it. With that mixture of the sort of the young male statistic as well for suicide, it's a nasty, nasty mix. So, you know, we at the uni really do push on trying to talk to each other and ingraining that into students when they leave in the next 5, 10, 20 years, whatever, to, if they are struggling, just talk, you know, like we say, just talk to each other and, you know, not asking, you okay, but asking twice, no, you actually, are you okay? So it's an interesting thing, and it'd be interesting to see sort of where the rest of this sort of conversation goes, and it'd be good to feedback to the students from that as well, really.
Definitely. And Charlie?
Yeah, so I can think of a specific example quite recently, really. So there's a friend of mine who I speak to very regularly. One day, it was over a weekend, and he suddenly was very quiet. Didn't hear much from him. And I really just wanted to press and find out why. But he said he just wanted some space for a bit. But I knew that wasn't quite right. So I got in contact with him. And eventually I got him just tell me what was going on. And his mum had been diagnosed with Parkinson's quite young. And he just didn't know how to deal with it. But actually, I think being able to talk through it with him, with a mate, it made him feel a lot better about it. So that definitely helped him. But as Lewis was saying, I think generally for students at the moment, it's such a social way of life normally that this dramatic change for us has been really hard to get used to. Obviously, we're in a world that is so connected, yet during lockdown, we feel very apart. But it is so easy just to pick up the phone and have a good old natter. And I think that's helped a lot of us through it. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You said something there, Charlie, about that you noticed your friend had gone a bit quiet and needed a bit of space. And I guess sort of not just aimed at you, but aimed at anyone who maybe has been in this situation. If you notice that someone has gone a bit quiet or is maybe saying some things that are slightly worrying to you, sort of from your experiences or from what do you think is the best practice of trying to encourage them to talk to you or to find someone to talk to and open up without sort of backing them into a corner?
Yeah, I think it's a really tricky balance, because I know personally sometimes I do just want a bit of space and a bit of quiet to process things. But then again, also sometimes I just need someone to come up and say, right, tell me what's happening and we'll talk through this. And then I do. And I think definitely with my male friends, they find it harder to sort of break that ice in terms of talking through the problem. So that's what I know. It is a tricky balance, definitely, between giving people space, but also helping them. So trying to break the ice and help them engage in that topic.
Some really difficult topics as well to talk about a lot of the time. And Georgie, following on from what you said at the start, I know we talked about your dad quite a lot, what, last year, and how he was doing. Obviously a really difficult situation, particularly when you throw in a pandemic into the whole situation. But ultimately, how has that been to manage? Because I suppose someone in your perspective, all of your energy can often be channeled towards him. But then how do you also check that you're okay at the same time?
So it has been difficult. I know that my dad is kind of living his dreams from when he was a youngster through me, and by enabling me to, you know, move away and get out to the training camps and making sure that I can still do the training and competitions necessary to, you know, be, you know, where I am now. That's how he's kind of living his dreams and enjoying his life, is knowing that I'm out there doing those things. And so I know that even though it's been really difficult me being away, he is much happier knowing that that's where I am, essentially, which seems a little bit backwards. But again, that's just how he kind of helps get it helps him get through what he's going through. And I know that FaceTime call isn't the same as being able to give someone a hug. But sadly, that is, you know, how it's been, and it has been really difficult. But, you know, now the restrictions have kind of leveled out a little bit between England and Wales. I've managed to get back home and be based there. And so I do get to spend that time with him, because, and it does make you appreciate things more, for sure. I'm much more grateful of the time that I do have with him and the little things, whether that's just a, you know, 10-minute dog walk, because you don't know when I'm going to have to pack my bags and head back over the other side of the border for training. And how long I'm going to have to be there for. So yeah, it's been difficult, but it's taught me a lot of valuable life lessons.
Question sort of aimed at all of you really, but we'll start with Georgie and George. But when these restrictions are first announced by the government, especially when lockdowns are coming, and a lot of the time it's news to us, or we don't quite know how that's going to affect us, both in terms of our jobs or in terms of university studies. That how does when something like that is announced, sort of how does that make you feel in terms of like the uncertainty of, you know, what's going to happen over the next few days? Like, is my life going to be turned upside down? And how have you sort of found ways of dealing with that?
I think you just got to roll with the punches. So every time there's been a new update, it's been a bit of a, oh, okay, what's it going to throw at us this time? But again, you know, British Shooting and the shooting grounds that are allowed to stay open for elite sport have been absolutely fantastic. So being part of the world-class programme, we get exemption letters, so we're still allowed to get out and train, thankfully. Even if it is at very specific locations, we've only got 3 training grounds available at the minute, all at opposite ends of the country, which is always fun. But, you know, the shooting grounds have been fantastic. So as soon as there's been an update, I've been able to just pop on the phone to one of the guys that works there and ask them what their take on it is. And if they're happy to keep it and stay open, then brilliant. I can get back into training the next day. But there's only so much you can do. You can't worry about it and sweat the small stuff, because, you know, there are people in much less fortunate places. You know, so even if the worst were to happen and we can't continue to train, then, you know, we're just in the same boat as everybody else. And we're already in a very privileged position to be able to do what we do. So you've just got to take it on the chin, really.
And how about yourself, George? Obviously, rugby is still being allowed to continue to train and to play, but obviously there's still that uncertainty around, you know, if it's potentially going to have to stop anytime soon. We've seen Champions Cup games postponed. So how do you and your teammates cope and get through those times where there is that bit of uncertainty?
Yeah, it has. I guess it has been weird. Like, normally you rely on kind of getting into a routine, and a lot of rugby players enjoy routine in terms of rocking up at certain times, being told where you are, what to wear at certain times, and then to kind of have that routine taken away through games being cancelled, through testing, through social distancing, all that kind of stuff, all the sort of the new trends going on around the club has been weird, and like, it's taken some getting used to, but ultimately I think I said to Alistair a couple of weeks ago that all of us are grateful that we can still do what we do, and yes, it's looking a little bit different, and yes, we don't have crowds that we normally do, but we're allowed out of the house, we're allowed to go and train 5 days a week and play a game on a weekend, and that's our job, and that's what we love doing. So ultimately we're grateful for that. Going back to the start of lockdown was again tough, because the uncertainty. So the first thing was 3 weeks, wasn't it, going to be in lockdown 3 weeks, and I moved back in with a couple of lads, and we were training really hard, expecting to be straight back in after 3 weeks, and then you get another update saying it's going to be another 3 weeks, and it ends up being 3 months, I think it was, in the end. So yeah, the uncertainty of it was particularly difficult, although I did enjoy parts of it, but yeah, that's taken some getting used to. But like Georgie said, you do just kind of have to roll with the punches, no matter whether it's good news or bad news coming from the government.
Plenty of punches have been thrown recently, yeah, government announcements. But one common theme, I suppose, that's come up from everyone so far is the importance of routine. I know, George, you definitely talked about that when we recorded a couple of weeks back and how important that's been for you specifically, just to get through with having some sort of routine. But names to throw it open to Lewis and Charlie for this one specifically, but juggling everything, be it work, uni work, life, as well as all those various punches that are getting thrown by government announcements, that must be one of the big challenges that everyone's had to cope with throughout, not so much just lockdown, but various tier announcements and everything else that's come our way.
Well, during the first lockdown, for some lovely reason, I decided to do a part-time master's at King's College London, which isn't part-time, but there we are. And, you know, along sort of other things, I'm in my last year of this president term. So I'm, you know, trying to find jobs for, you know, this next coming year. And like Charlie, we're both looking for the forces side of things, which is a huge application, which takes a lot of energy and a lot of paperwork. So balancing that with the multitude of things that both the uni and the students want, it's not an art, it's a butchery, it really is. But it's something to enjoy, really. And sort of going back to sort of the routine side of things, I mean, it's a tricky one, really, especially when your world's being completely turned upside down, moving from one area from, you know, down in Cirencester in the Cotswolds, where you think, oh, I'll only be home for a couple of weeks, like George said, so I think it's only going to be a couple of weeks, and then next thing you know, it's June. So it's a really, really tricky thing. So it's one thing, and I think sort of the one thing I realised with this is the durability of people. I really have. You realise that people are tougher mentally and physically than they realise. You know, we had to tell students very sadly that a lot of third years who left last year, that's it, you can't come back now. That's the March, bye-bye, you know, you're gone. Thank you very much for your 2.5-3 years. See you soon. And so that was quite sad to see. But you made me realise, like, the malleability of, like, the likes of Charlie, who's in the second year, where you could say, you're going to be learning online, never done it before, have a go, you're paying for it. So it's a really, really tricky thing, really. I'm not sure if you've got any more thoughts on that, Charlie, really.
Yeah, no, I think it's tricky in terms of, for some people, aligning their priorities and where they best sort of fit, where they fit in best. So I've got a friend in particular who's got lots of younger siblings, and they're over in Northern Ireland. And she, you know, she felt it's her responsibility to go back home and help her parents look after those kids who would otherwise be preoccupied in school. But also, she's trying to juggle her commitment to herself in getting her degree and, you know, giving this online learning a fair shot. So definitely there's lots of juggling going on, for sure. And definitely lots of anxiety as well, for young people, especially people who are still in education who don't yet know what their future holds. So, you know, they're constantly looking for opportunities to get experience in the workplace, build up the CV, so that when they get to the end of their education, they can go and do what they want to do. But for the last year, that hasn't really been an option. So yeah, definitely increased anxiety in terms of what the future holds for people in education.
Going back to lockdown one, and this is something for everyone really, if we can remember that far back, because it seems like a lifetime ago, is there anything that you've all individually picked up or learnt or practiced from that first lockdown that has helped you this time around? So I think sometimes a lot of people can get down with the weather and that this particular lockdown has been harder than the first one, but I'm not sure if there's anything that you've all picked up from that first one that has made this one a little bit more easier to handle.
I think I realised that I need my personal space at certain times. I mean, spending 3 months living with two other guys, although they're really good mates, you get on top of each other eventually. And I think everyone requires a little bit of personal space every now and then. But again, going back to the routine thing, I mean, some people don't like it, but it kind of made me realise that without it, I'm not very productive. Like, it's so easy when you're in those lockdowns to kind of wake up at 11 in the morning and end up do do very little and end up going to bed really late. So kind of laying out, I mean, it wasn't like strict routine, I didn't have timetables written down or anything like that, but knowing that I was going to get up first thing like a certain time in the morning and get my gym session done out of the way, and get uni work done and out of the way, before I did anything else, that really helped, helped me in terms of structuring my day and making myself more productive rather than just wasting days. And I think that's when people kind of start to lose their minds a little bit, when you start wasting days.
You're listening to Sportspiel, the Players podcast.
To throw up a couple of follow-up questions from some of the points that were raised before, and I suppose there's a lot of guys on this call, and male mental health in particular, I suppose, is often brought up as something that the man up tag can often get thrown around. Don't talk about your feelings, don't open up, that sort of stuff. How important is it that we kind of get away from that, I suppose, historical stereotype, if you like, and considering it's time to talk day, to encourage guys to open up and talk a little bit like what you were mentioning at the start, Charlie?
Yeah, so especially in the, I think in the agricultural sector, which is obviously where we come from, it resonates even more so, this tough man sort of persona. It's a tough lifestyle, and you do have to have some resilience about you. But there's a point where resilience becomes something more, and that you've got to sort of identify that point within yourself and educate yourself about what you can do when it's getting too much. So yeah, definitely there's been lots of work done to try and fight this stigma, but it's still a way off, and just encouraging people to open up and talk, it's easier said than done. But it's got to start with your mates, I think, on a grassroots level. Just braving the topics that you perhaps don't want to talk about every once in a while. And from there, if you do that to one of your mates, he might do that to another one of his mates, and it'll pass on. So yeah, it's just having courage about yourself to ask the difficult questions, I think.
Mm-hmm. And Lewis, I see you nodding your head there.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with what, you know, Charlie's been saying. There is, and he's very right, there's a fine line between resilience and stubbornness, and especially in agriculture, I can tell you where there's many people who would perceive themselves to be resilient, but they're not, they're just stubborn when in regards to asking for help. It's just one of those things, and it is very a case of where, you know, the sort of the phrase toxic masculinity comes into play. You know, it's a really tricky sort of situation, but again, you know, we try our utmost at the university, especially in the student union, to make sure we both encourage informal chats. Like Charlie would say, speaking to friends, speaking to your peers in your rugby club or shooting club, whatever, making sure that the conversation, there's no stigma of conversation. You can just say, you know, I'm not sure about this, and you can just talk about it. And then also sort of in a more sort of formal sort of way, we sort of encourage sort of talks as well. We've got a really great student support service with welfare at the university, and it's brilliant. You know, you can get free counselling for all students for free, and there's no limit to what you can have in regards to that. And again, that's all anonymous. And one thing within sort of Charlie's role is a signposting position where students can say anonously, you know, I could you speak, potentially speak to my friend or get one of the counsellors at the university. But that's all well and good while you're at university. But, you know, it goes back to what we were saying earlier. It's ingraining into students that, you know, the trait of asking for help, whether that is, you know, help on the farm or help mentally. And again, it is easier said than done, but it's a slow transition, but it's one which is happening. And hopefully in a few more years or however long, hopefully not overly long, it'll be a nicer position we'll be all in, really. So it's a tricky one.
On that note, and going back to what George was talking about in terms of routines, do you think therefore that it's something that we should encourage people to do, is to develop a routine of having meaningful conversations with people, not like scripting it. So you must talk to this person this day, but just encouraging people just to, even when things are going well in their lives, just to pick up the phone or Skype someone on when we can, you know, meet up with a friend and just have that meaningful conversation every now and again, just as part of a routine to make it easier to then talk when things are difficult.
Yeah, I think that is a, and I think sort of the important word there is encourage. You know, you can't ask people to do things if they don't want to do it, especially with something as particular as, you know, asking for help or, you know, something around this. Definitely the encouragement is something that we do, especially now. And I'm sure you all have had the thrilling Zoom quizzes or Zoom drinks over the last couple of months, which... they're just great, I can tell you. But something like that, I found it really gave me something that I used to have on a Sunday evening. So really used to look forward to meeting my mates for a pub quiz and seeing what my face is photoshopped onto this week. You know, it used to really give something to look forward to. In regards to daily routines, again, not sure, especially now with so many things going on, potentially it's easier just to recommend people just to do it a few times a week or whenever they feel fit to do so. Just again, but you know, other people might have different thoughts about it, really.
Zoom Wikipedia roulette for me, if anyone's got that. To throw it back to George and Georgie, and that again, kind of changing the stigma side of things, what roles do your sports have to play in that as well? So I think back to when Dan Cole did, he was on the 28 Not Out. Chat that we did on Zoom way back, I think it was May time, and he said how much rugby had changed, for example, and that not so much toxic masculinity, but encouraging guys to open up where possible. I don't know if that's something where you feel your sports are doing quite well in or could do more in, but similarly have quite an important role in society to kind of help that.
I feel like within shooting, they are starting to develop, they are getting better. There's obviously some stigma around mental health and shotgun certificates. I think whilst British Shooting have put a lot of effort into developing new communities whereby people can talk and have that support that they need, no one necessarily wants to stand up and be the first person to, you know, put their hand up and say, I'm really struggling, because no one wants to take the risk of, you know, the associations with licensing and things like that. So, you know, they are opening up opportunities for people. However, I think there's still a lot that we can do.
I just think people, more and more people in rugby especially, are coming out and talking about it, whether they've had past issues or are struggling now. And the fact that people are doing that is only a good sign. Like, you know, recently, well, Tom Stevenson, who used to be at Saints with me and as a mate, came out, really did an article in the Telegraph, I think got released yesterday or a couple of days ago, about how he struggled through mental health. And he admitted that he was never the kind of person he never thought he'd be the kind of person who would talk about that openly. And it's taken probably too long, but he has come out and spoken about it. And so people doing that is sets a really good example and allows, hopefully, or makes people realise that there's no problem. We're coming out speaking about it and people are there to help.
Definitely. Moving on then to sort of our second part, I've got in my notes anyway. And since we are a sports podcast, after all, kind of want to flip it on its head a little bit and talk about the positive impact that sport can have on mental health. Something I think we can all relate to, really, particularly on this podcast, because we've all been there in one way or another. Lewis, I'll start or aim my first question at you. And RAU puts kind of a big emphasis on the sport side of things from a student perspective. What does that do, sport, in terms of bringing students together and really helping them out if they ever find themselves in that position where times are getting tough?
Yeah, so it's, well, because I used to be, and George will be thrilled to know, I used to be the second team captain of the People's 15, second 15, it was great.
That's the best team to be in at university, isn't it?
I think we got a lot more spectators than the first team, but they won't be glad to know. I think they already do. But sort of going actually to the question, I think it's it's an interesting thing, especially with the culture within universities. A lot of the, and there's no hiding the fact, and this is associated with the sports clubs as well, you know, sort of around the sort of the drinking side of things, is potentially a lot of the only ways a lot of students actually get to meet each other, of, you know, of a certain sort of character, similar characters. But for sports in general at the REU, we're very, very lucky to say that we have a great range of clubs, sports clubs and sports societies, everything from two rugby teams. We actually have a ladies rugby team, which is a partnership with the Cirencester local team, as well as, you know, creating that sort of local sort of partnership as well. Like every university, you know, we have our, well, challenges sometimes with the local sort of population, but we really are working on it. And then sort of going on, you know, we've got a great sort of Clay Pigeons club, which in a normal year, obviously, would be competing all across the country, up in St Andrews, Aberystwyth, to our friends up at Harper Ave. So it's a really sort of interesting sort of case, and sort of, you know, again, go back to sort of a normal Wednesday, non sort of COVID, you know, this time last year, we would have up to sort of 9-10 teams going out all across, you know, the country to various sort of other universities, playing on Wednesday afternoons and coming back all to our to the university, and, you know, having, you know, we didn't do great, but we had fun. It's all about splitting down the boundaries, especially in the first couple of weeks as a sort of a new starter, a fresher. The best way to meet sort of second and third years and postgrads is to join a club or society. And there's no better way to meet somebody when you sidestep them or you've got absolutely smashing rugby. So there's no better way to know somebody than that. And that was the sort of thing I found for myself, was going to rugby training, meeting sort of similar people and, you know, chatting and, I've done this, whatever. And then going back to the bar and having a pint after lots of fitness sessions, obviously. So it's a really thing that actually this year as well, especially to put a COVID edge on it, has been missed. COVID's given us some more challenges, and so it's an interesting thing, and obviously, you know, it's a really good way for, you know, sports and not just sports but also societies as well. It's a great way for people to meet new people, and this year has been missed, but obviously we're trying our best to make sure that they can still get the most they can. I think, because I know Charles is in the OTC and he has, he'll probably say after, he's got some really good connections all across sort of the country, up to, you know, Oxford side of things, from meeting people. So it's a really interesting sort of a case, really.
Yeah, just adding on to that, there's like another dimension of sport involved in universities, that is the university officer training corps. So as well as playing rugby for uni last year, that was great fun. But also got to meet people from loads of universities near us. So I used to go to Oxford to train on a Tuesday night. I'm a keen runner, so I used to do the cross-country competitions. I used to get paid about £48 to run a 10K on a Wednesday, which, you know, was great. When rugby wasn't on, I'd go and do that. And I'm making friends from people from different universities, different backgrounds. So that was great fun. Also got to go skiing as well, a really amazing opportunity. So again, we got paid to do that as part of our training. And lots of the guys that came with us had never been skiing before. So it's great, again, to, like, at the end of the day, you catch up with them, get all the stories about people going face first into the instructor's bottom and stuff like that. It's brilliant.
We speak there about the importance of sport for university students, and we've spoken about the importance of sport for us as adults as well, but it's also vitally important that the opportunity to go out and develop skills and develop those friendships for children as well. And Georgie and George, I know through your work with Mintridge, you have spent a lot of time in the past sort of mentoring children. And I guess sort of what have been the things that you've noticed that you've seen that the children grow and develop most throughout your mentoring with them? And I guess how important is it that we get them back to being active in some ways as soon as possible?
I think one of the biggest things that I've seen is how it can change someone's mindset, and it gives people something to look forward to. And so I know that, and me too, like I'm still in that kind of growth mindset when it comes to sport and physical activity. But I think whilst children and young people are still maturing and developing and kind of understanding where they want to go and what they want to do. They need something, one, to take their mind off the stresses of daily life, but also they need an avenue to, you know, get out and do things and work on fitness or strength or whatever it may be, that, you know, their specific sport. And there are loads of people who obviously are struggling with not being able to go and be with friends in school, or they're not able to go and play football or go to the park or things like that that they would normally be able to do. And so seeing people adapting to situations and trying a new sport or trying to develop a skill at home that is specific to their sport but might be slightly unusual or quirky, so whether that's developing hand-eye coordination or your reaction times at home, you know, seeing how people are turning to these things and trying all sorts of new ways to achieve their goals, so that they can hit the ground running when they go back to their sport, I think has been absolutely fantastic.
And I suppose some of that links back into the mentioning about something to look forward to, but a little bit like the escapism side of things, because we could all do with a bit of escapism every now and again, particularly now. I know, Georgia, you've, you know, started off this time last year, having never done much running, outrun me quite considerably in a half marathon, and are now like ultra marathon level. And has that sort of running side of things been a little bit of that, giving you a bit of escapism from the madness of the world?
A lot of escapism. So yeah, I took on the half marathon, kept it up, and now I'm taking on a marathon probably next month, maybe the month afterwards, depending on competition schedules and whether they go ahead or not. For me, I think running is, it just gives you something different to do, something to, I can keep pushing myself. So, you know, I have a Monday to Friday job as a digital publisher, and, you know, competing and shooting and training all the time can be a bit much. And so it is a way for me to develop myself. It keeps me fit and strong and healthy. So that's, you know, one positive impact already, but it gives me a mental break, but it also helps me to push myself. So I started off not being able to run 200 meters and I was like, oh no, screw this, I'm off home, I don't like this. And then you just turn it into a game almost, and a challenge. Okay, you just need to make it to that lamppost, you need to make it to that next car. And then again, when you get to that, you just need to look for the next thing and the next thing, and all of a sudden you are 13.1 miles down and you're crossing the finish line, which is absolutely fantastic. But yeah, it's definitely something that's helped me develop and put back into my shooting. And because you are that, just like a little bit mentally stronger than the next person, because you know you can push your body, you can push your mind. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to the challenges that I'm going to kind of move on to this year.
And Georgia, it goes back to what you were saying about needing your own space at the same time, doesn't it? About how important it is to have that escapism along with everything else.
Yeah, it does. I mean, like, especially kids, most kids are just bundles of energy, aren't they? And they can go and release that energy on a midweek training session or a Sunday afternoon with their friends. And that's kind of all been taken away now. So, like Georgie said, finding new and innovative ways of releasing that energy at home has been amazing to see. But I'm sure that some kids have struggled with it as well. Working with Mintridge just has kind of shown me the power that sport has. I mean, even if people don't necessarily enjoy the sport, just them throwing themselves into it, and meeting new people like the guy spoke about, and enabling them to come out of their shells, that otherwise they might not have done if they hadn't thrown themselves into a new sport. I think is there for all to see, and that not being there during COVID, I'm sure has been really tough for a lot of kids, and especially and probably put a lot of pressure on parents as well to kind of to keep them active, as well as all the other stuff they've got to do in the meantime. So yeah, I'm sure there's been a lot of challenges, but I mean, as social media has shown, there's also been a lot of new innovative ways of keeping people fit and fit and active.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media, so
search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
This is my next kind of big question for everyone, so brace yourselves. When you have found yourself in a place where things might not have been going according to plan, or you might have been struggling mentally with something, how did you A, cope with it, but then how has it made you stronger off the back of it? I'm firing this again at Georgie first, apologies. But I know because you obviously had that time where you took the best part of the year out for sport when things weren't quite right mentally, but then it seems to have made you a lot stronger going forward.
Absolutely. So, in 2019, I took a bit of a year out to kind of really understand what was going to happen in regards to my dad's cancer, where I wanted to go, what I wanted to achieve within shooting. Because at the time when I was going training, I felt like I was just going training because I didn't want to let my coach down. And that's absolutely the wrong reason to be in a sport. And that time off really helped me develop my mindset and understand my goals and how I was going to achieve them and kind of put into place plans and step-by-step processes that meant I was going to be able to really go for them and achieve them. And obviously it's caused a few challenges along the way. So having that time off meant I went into 2020 season really fresh. I made my first senior international final in Spanish Grand Prix, which is Malaga, first thing in January, and won gold. So that was amazing to me. And I felt really energized. I was getting back into my peak. And then obviously with COVID, I then haven't competed since. So that's been really, really difficult and a challenge because having time off in 2019 meant now I only have one medal to make me eligible for selection for the GB squad this year because I haven't a backdate obviously with lack of competitions in 2020. So that's come with its challenges. However, kind of because of that medal and having the time off and being able to go and achieve that, I then have been selected for the World Class Programme this year. And that's putting me in the best possible place moving forward for the International Grand Prix this year and potentially then European Championships and World Cups towards the back end of this year. So yes, it's had its challenges. However, I'm much more clear now on where I want to go and why I want to go there because I've had the time to reflect and do some personal analysis kind of thing and understand kind of a personal brand point of view, why I want to go on and do these things and breaking it down into like clear objectives for myself. And then if something does or doesn't align with those objectives, then I can say, yes, I'll spend time on it or no, I won't. Because, you know, breaking it down into three pillars, such as protect and promote my sport, encourage and inspire others and striving for greatness, you know, within my own shooting or whatever I put myself to, means that I'm able to align what I'm spending my time on better with where I want to go.
Definitely. George, you're the next victim of the tough question.
Yeah, I guess I'd never really had a specific struggle up until, again, it wasn't such a struggle, but it was just a new challenge for me coming back to rugby after lockdown. Like, I guess I'd had like a pretty sharp rise from making my Premiership debut to then playing 30 games and then being called up to the England squad and making my England debut all kind of came within 2 seasons. And so I kind of just lived those 2 seasons on a massive high, really, and was just really enjoying rugby. And I guess when a string of poor games came together when I first came back from lockdown, I was like, okay, like I'm kind of being put back on my pedestal now and realise that it's not just going to be enjoyable, you're not just going to play well the whole time. And so learning from that, realizing how I'm going to move on from game to game, like putting games into the past, and understanding why I was probably struggling in certain areas, enabled me to kind of clear my mind and just go back to the emphasis on really enjoying my rugby again. I think I was heaping pressure on myself probably a bit too much. And kind of when I cleared my mind, had a focus on areas I need to work on, and then put a real emphasis on enjoying my rugby again, it kind of really helped, and I feel like I'm in a much better place again for it now.
And then Lewis and Charlie, kind of the same question, but I guess for a lot of people, that reflection is probably something that you can relate with, whether it's in lockdown or various stages throughout the last year.
Yeah, I think sort of, I've never really, this hasn't really been a majorly particular thing that's affected me personally. I think the only sort of one, which would be sort of anything, which would be anything of interest, to be honest, would be, so the RU, we were one of the only universities in the country to do a face-to-face Freshers Week this year, this September, which I can assure you was thrilling to organise, all the COVID sort of regulations and everything. And about 3 days before, so yeah, it's the Tuesday before the Friday of when students were going to turn up. We had everything planned, everything booked, whatever. Boris changed, you know, the Prime Minister changed the rules from 30 people to 6. And we basically had about 48 hours to rip up everything, throw it up in the air, and start again. So we did it, and we did it well, and we had no cases at all with the 10 days. And I think sort of in life, sort of for me, if I've ever had something which is really like a thought, oh, hang on, this is troubling. I've, you know, just breathe and full of thought, try to think about the processes, about how to get around the issue, you know, try to think about it theoretically. And if you can't think about how you're going to get around it, well, you're going to have to endure it. And I think one phrase I always like, I can't remember where it comes from, but it's like, if you're not going to tell your grandparents about the issue in 50 years time, 60 years time, why are you worrying about it? You know, there's, you can't do much about it. You're just going to, if you start to dig yourself in a hole, you're just going to get deeper and deeper. But that's just sort of what I think. And yeah, it'd be interesting to hear what Charlie has to say from a student point of view as well.
Yeah, so I think back to a time when I was 17 when I finished my A-levels. I was young for my year. And I felt particularly young and a bit lost. I didn't particularly enjoy my A-levels. I didn't know what I wanted to do next. And I was at this big crossroads in my life. And I was fortunate enough to be in a position where I could go and travel and work. And so, yeah, going away and living. So I lived in Japan for 6 months, worked skiing. I was a ski instructor out there. And then I went to New Zealand, worked in a winery, and then just traveled Asia pretty much. And that gave me a whole new perspective on what I valued in my life, and what I thought I was good at, my perception of people. And just, it gave me a whole new, clearer picture of what I wanted from my life and what I wanted to do. And then I ended up finding the perfect university for me, which was the RAU. And I got going there in 2019 and haven't looked back since. So yeah, it's definitely being able to travel for me was that, that sort of step that made me be able to reflect and find my direction again.
You're listening to Sportspiel, the Players podcast.
And going forwards then, I bring us on to sort of the final part, really, of the chat today, which is really broadly titled Life and Going Forward. And this first question is kind of aimed at Charlie, and the pandemic has obviously affected us all in very different ways, but I think a lot of other people in more significant ways than others. And from the student perspective, can kind of sum it up what it's been like for RAU students, because I know quite a few of you have been able to go home, but there's quite a lot who are still at the uni and are in very different circumstances and might be finding it quite challenging right now.
Yeah, there's definitely a real array of circumstances. For myself, I've been really lucky and fortunate in being able to escape to my home in Sussex and having vast open space to run around and exercise and that kind of thing. But yeah, definitely there's been overseas guys who've really been struck hard by this. They haven't been able to go home to wherever in the world they might come from, because of the various restrictions. And actually they've been sort of cooped up in their rooms. Being on campus means that they're under a particular sort of regime, because there's constant security there and people to enforce the rules, which obviously the rules need to be enforced. But being at home, it's slightly more relaxed. You don't have people watching over you. You don't have people micromanaging when you can eat, where you can go, and that kind of thing. So yeah, I feel really, really sort of sympathetic to those guys who have had a really tough time with it.
What support's in place for people who might find themselves in that situation? Because this comes back to, I suppose, the juggling work chat that we had at the start, where if you're in that circumstance, it might be a fair bit more challenging to get your degree work completed when you're having to face that.
Yeah, 100%. So at the university, we've got a great support network and team, and they've been working throughout the pandemic, obviously not in a face-to-face manner, but via the internet and via different communication formats. But there's been, in every stage of planning throughout the last year, the university has considered those guys who are in the very worst position, and they've worked off that. They haven't thought, oh, everyone's having a great time because they're off home and that's absolutely fine, they're off at their farms, whatever. They haven't considered that. They've considered the worst possible case and they've worked from there. So if that means moving deadlines or making special arrangements for people to engage in a more positive way in their studies, and they've made those for them. They've been really quite understanding. And also just recently in this obviously current lockdown, they've been able to refund the students who have gone home. So they're not paying for the accommodation that they're not staying in, which I think was a bold move, definitely financially, for the university to be so understanding and not make people pay. I know definitely people at other universities have had to pay. They've been bound by various terms and conditions in their contracts. So that's thousands of pounds just going to waste. But yeah, the RE has been really sound. So yeah, commend their effort, definitely.
Yeah, it's been a real mix, I think, from across the country, to be honest, hasn't it? Throwing it open to everybody, do we feel that there's almost a second pandemic at the moment, in that there's a mental health pandemic, while we're all obviously focused on battling a virus right now? And ultimately, how do we tackle that, or how do we improve that situation? I'll start with George. There's another big question for you.
I don't think it will be clear at the moment that there is. I think give it another year or so, and I think it will become very obvious that yes, there was a mental health pandemic going on during this time, and kind of by that time, it's a little bit too late for some people. So the realization that during these times, a lot of people will have been struggling, whether it's to do with their job, to do with having to look after kids, everything that's changed in people's lives would have had massive effects on people's mental health. Some positively, hopefully, and hopefully it would have. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely cases where there would have been positive impact for some people, but there would have been a lot more negative impacts. This day in particular is just one day of the year, but hopefully the fact that everyone's talking about it, and more people that realise that there will have been a mental health pandemic going on at the same time as this coronavirus pandemic, we'll get people talking, and hopefully anyone who is in bad situations can feel like they can talk to people to help them.
Just adding to that as well, George, I think there's still yet to come is the economic fallout of the pandemic and the amount of jobs that are going to be lost in the future once sort of the furlough schemes wrap up. And I think what we really need from the Treasury and Rishi Sunak in particular is some plans going forward into the future in order to give people that stability, to erase some of the anxiety behind losing your job, particularly in areas like transport, aviation, tourism. So yeah, I definitely think there needs to be some work done in planning for the future to make sure people are reassured about their positions and jobs.
And I really hope Georgie can hear us, because we seem to be a victim of good old Wi-Fi issues again.
Yeah, I can hear you. Sorry, I've just been completely beated out of the meeting.
That is pretty much this entire year in a nutshell right there. But not anything to add in terms of what the guys have already said about whether there's that underlying pandemic that is perhaps going under the radar at the moment with regards to mental health?
Yeah, definitely. I think like no matter what happens and who you are, you've like I think everyone has been affected by by this in some way. And so whether that's having a fear of going out and mixing with people, you know, due to risk factors or, you know, especially having vulnerable people at home, you know, there's people are going to struggle to come to terms with going back to normal. And whilst that, you know, a lot of people can't wait for that to happen, myself included, it is going to be a bit of a shock to the system and like how we can recover from this. In a kind of sustainable way is going to be one to definitely watch out for.
And then my sort of final question for everyone really is, if you could give out one piece of advice, and often the best advice is the hardest advice to follow at the same time, but one piece of advice to someone who might be struggling at this particular moment in time, what would that be based on your own sort of experiences or what you've seen doing the work that you do? Charlie, I'll start with you this time.
Good luck, Charlie.
Yeah, a bit of a disclaimer. I'm definitely no guru for this. But for me, it's been routine. We've heard this a lot, I know, during this call. But yeah, definitely routine. It's the small things that make a big difference at the end of the day. So getting up, making my bed. As a student, I've been quite lax at making my bed in the past, for sure, and getting up on time. So yeah. For me, getting up, making my bed, getting up at the same time, having a good breakfast, and running six days a week does the trick for me. And also just being grateful for what I have in my life and focusing on the positive things as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. A lot to be said for making the bed. That's a big one. Definitely. George, isn't that routine is obviously a big thing for you as well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think having a process and focusing on the process rather than outcome is really important. Just look after the controllables. Look at those sort of things because you can't control your controllables. So I think looking at those and working hard on those, and then if you are struggling, just chat to your mates or chat to your family who also might have ideas of ways to cope and ways to deal with things, and although they might not be able to come and see you in person, they might be able to help in ways you didn't think they could.
I like look after the controllables. That's a good one to pass around, I think. And Georgie?
I think one of the best pieces of advice that I've had recently is to kind of stop expecting quite so much of yourself. So if you've say got a to-do list with 101 things on it, just pick one important thing for you to do today that would make a difference, and just solely focus on that one thing rather than trying to achieve five things that aren't going to be realistically achievable in the time frame that you've got, and just be proud that you've done that one thing for the day. Or whether that is something that, is going to be something like making your bed, or whether that's going for a run, or whether that is, one piece of work or do one part of your uni assignment, something like that. Just one small chunk of work that you can achieve within that day and just focus on that, rather than asking yourself to do a million and one unachievable things and then being annoyed at yourself at the end of the day. That one thing will make a big difference. And that's definitely helped me and my to-do list over lockdown.
Also a big fan of that. Quickly, in lockdown one, I was going to have physique of Anthony Joshua by the end of it, and that did not happen. don't beat yourself up over that. Before I wrap up, my last word really, probably should go to the Minchish Foundation since Mrs. Wallace is on the call. And ultimately, George and Georgie, as the Minchish ambassadors on this call, has this whole situation just summed up more than ever how important work like what Minchish carries out is to people and to children?
Yeah, definitely. Because like I mentioned earlier, there are so many people who, rely on role models and being inspired by other people to help them to go on and achieve their own things. And, you know, sport hasn't been able to continue throughout the whole of lockdown, especially lockdown one. So being able to still access, you know, these sporting role models like George, especially, you know, these people really look up to athletes and ambassadors, and it helps them focus on something positive. So being able to continue these programs throughout such a difficult time is so, so important.
I agree. I completely agree with what Georgie said, and particularly the sort of sports that a lot of kids won't ever have seen or have heard of, probably, that Mintridge can offer and bring into schools. That is really, like, really important, and Mintridge can, I think, help kids find sports that they're really passionate about by bringing those sort of sports into the schools and run those sorts of programs in schools with role models as well. And obviously lockdown has not enabled Mintridge to be able to do that. But I think that's so important because, yeah, like you said, if you try new things, you might find a new passion, and whether you don't find the passion, but you actually are able to open up, or you're able to, I don't know, change your personality for in a positive way, then that can only be a good thing.
Definitely. Opening up, talking about it, a whole load of things. And that brings us to the end of today's particular special Time to Talk Day podcast. Thank you, everyone, for their contributions. I think we've covered a lot of important topics throughout today, whether it's the importance of routine, because that came up quite a lot, the importance of support networks, what sport can do for you, and ultimately the importance of talking about it and reaching out if you are finding yourself in that position. I think that's the main takeaway for pretty much everyone who will be listening and watching this, as well as the expert advice that I think that we got at the end from the three of you. So thank you to Mintridge for organising this. Thank you as well to the Royal Agricultural University for being a part of it as well. And of course, thank you to Georgie, to George, to Charlie, and to Lewis. I'm sure we'll be hearing it in spirit as he's giving his Fair Trade Coffee seminar. And thank you everyone for tuning in today. Take care. Hope lockdown doesn't go on too much longer, and we'll see everyone very soon.